webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 27th of October, 2016. Broadcast, can you believe it's 2016 and the 27th of October? But anyway, we're broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, thanks to the generosity of GR executive producers Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, and where with Mark Twain we say, Christians go to church on Sunday to be forgiven for what they did on Saturday, and will do again come Monday.
And the beat goes on.
And the beat goes on. But right now, from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Michael Williams. How are you?
33410. I'm doing well, Paris. And we've already had a Gospel Revolution on here. We are 1 hour delayed in getting this recording started because, goodness gracious, oh man, we're gonna have to start charging high prices for those who want to listen to the cutting room floor. Goodness gracious.
And so, families, it is that we must leave you.
We've already had a good time, so.
Oh, yeah.
So it's here in Florida. We had a cold front. Oh, my gosh.
I knew a girl like that once.
You just would not believe. The other day, it only reached 82.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. People were outside with their sweaters on, I'm telling you.
Now,
I'm not exaggerating. People were wearing sweaters. But then the next evening, the temperatures actually dropped at about 3 o'clock in the morning to 62 degrees. Well, it's, we feel ourselves to be the privileged few here. Just anything south of a little town in Florida called Frostproof. We are not supposed to be having these things.
Hang on. Frostproof. We've just spent an hour with each other, absolutely enjoying each other and surprising each other with some revelations that we didn't expect. But Frostproof?
Frostproof. It's a town in Florida that is supposed to have been, they named it that because it was supposed to have been far enough south to have never, ever experienced frost, and never would. I think since then, that's changed. They did get frosted, and in fact, it's been frosted all the way down to Miami in my lifetime.
Dang, is this global cooling?
I'm not sure if it's global or just Florida. Of course, Florida is the world, you know. So
it is. Yeah. It is to Floridians. Yes,
it is politically. It is in every way. We determine all things that happen on the planet. So there
you have it, family. You want to know where it's happening?
That's why I left Texas. All the thing they claimed was to be the biggest at everything. We are the best at everything.
Oh, family, listen, if you're a Facebook fan, I just want to hit this up early and often. You need to hit the search bar in Facebook and search Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. You want any of our hundreds of hours of free products? Did I say hundreds? Thousands of hours of free products. Go there. You can download any of our years of podcasts, decades of teachings, or you can tune in to the Gospel 24/7 on Gospel Revolution Radio, thanks to GR executive producer Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. Mate, I was looking at a couple of Jeff Robertson's videos this week. Excellent stuff. One about the law, which was just, I had to listen to it two and a half times. Sorry, Jeff, you lost me on the on the third run through. But I had to listen to it a couple of times because it was just so good. Here was my classic takeaway from Jeff's movie. When people say, and right now, family, we're going through a letter. It was a letter that was put out on the web about Michael Williams and the Gospel Revolution. And in it, there was a suggestion that if we don't obey the law, you know, those Ten Commandment things written in stone that we like to have outside courthouses, if we don't obey the law, then we can't be righteous. And what really, I mean, it hit me like a cement brick to the head from the second story that Joseph never had the law.
Yeah.
And the moment that was into my brain, thank you, Jeff, was also that he would write his law on our hearts.
You know, it's those dynamic little points that make all the difference, those pivotal points, and this is the way I like to say it. When the jaw drops, the mind opens. So if you don't say something that makes people's jaw drop, you probably don't have their attention. So when the jaw drops, the mind opens. This thinking also that Jeff brought out in this particular one was not just that you can't be righteous, but if you're not under God's law, you have no moral compass.
If you aren't under, yes.
Yeah. So we're saying that Abraham had no moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph had no moral compass. Nobody had a moral compass in the first 400 and something years of history. There was no moral compass whatsoever.
Which would include Enoch, who was called the friend of God. And one day he went out and he...
Which included Noah also.
Dang. Yeah. Those amoral animals.
Well, it was one of the best points anyone could make about without the law, you cannot be moral.
Oh,
and you have no moral compass. It was one of the best that can be said about it.
Now, in this video, Jeffrey talked about antinomianism.
Mm-hmm. Your subject.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I listened to him talking about this, and I'm going, yes, Jeff. Yeah, more, Jeff. Bring it on, Jeff. And in case you don't know about this, we have a challenge out there.
Mm-hmm.
We have a $10,000 reward for this. You show us where you can find antinomianism in the Bible. You're not going to find it. You're going to find anomianism. You're going to find nomianism. But you're not going to find anything in the Bible that says antinomianism in either the Greek or in the English translation of it. You're not going to find it.
Now, why do we stand against this so much? Why do we make such a big deal out of this other than the fact that it doesn't exist? Tell everybody what antinomianism means. And the argument that has been presented by those who use the term and how ineffective that argument is when you realize that word does not exist in the Bible.
Antinomianism in the Greek would mean against,
mm-hmm.
Law, nomian, nomos, the law. So antinomos or antinomianism would mean against the law. And I loved when Jeff brought this out in that video. Anomian or anomos or anomianism, the moment you tack the prefix, you know, in English we have prefixes and suffixes. So we have words and we tack a prefix onto it instead of being, say, published, it's pre-published. That means it was published before.
Right.
Now, the moment you say anti-law, you're saying against the law. The moment you say a law or a nomina, in the Greek, the letter a as a prefix tacked onto the front of any word means outside of or without. So the Bible talks about with being certain things being without law or outside of the law, Mm-hmm. Not against the law.
Yeah, and that's a legitimate argument. See, that's where we learn when we read in those places where the word anomian. Now, Barris, what is the word in the Greek or in the English where anomian is that the word antinomianism is assumed? Do you know of an example right off your...
Yeah, several examples are without, they say without the law or out, and most examples are against the law.
And this is addressing, still addressing Jim's letter, because this is part of Jeff's video was addressing this very thing that came out of Jim's letter about antinomianist.
Yes, so, and we're referring, of course, to Dr. James Richards, out of Huntsville, Alabama, with the website impactministries.com, I think. And on that, you will find this letter that is, well, I think if I said it was excoriating, Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, I don't think I'd be going too far. This word that is referred to in this letter as antinomian or against the law, it is referring to no verse whatsoever in the New Testament.
He just uses the term in the letter, right?
Well, yes. I can't say I'm above this. I also use terms that I know and understand because I know that it will make me sound, well, as if I know what
but
I'm talking about.
But you do know whether or not it's in the Bible.
I know that much.
Yeah. And in this case, it's not in the Bible, is what you're saying.
Almost every time you look at the word lawless in the Bible.
Ah, so that's the term.
Yep. It will be anomian, outside the law, not against the law, not breaking the law.
Yeah, no, that's great. So as you're trying to win this $10,000, I wanted to trick Barris into helping you. So... So we want you to have the basics of this search and know the principles as to what this is built upon and where this word comes from. And now let me tell you something. I've listened to John Hagee. I've listened to Pat Robertson. I have listened to – I can't think of one that I've listened to that has not used the term in their attempt – to address grace, they always want to make sure they cover antinomianism because you don't want that.
No, Joseph Prince is big on it. But let me tell you something, Jimmy Swaggart, I haven't heard it in any of his songs. Hey, guess what happened yesterday, mate? I'm driving down the road. I'm just tooling up the tarmac from one little no-account Alabama town to another little no-account Alabama town. And suddenly, I heard this ad on my favorite. Look, family, don't kill me, will you? I'm pretty good on a keyboard. I'm okay. And I can play mostly any style of music you want. But I was raised on country, right? So I'm going up the road. And I've got my country station on. It's before midday. Now, in Alabama, before midday, you have to have church stuff on. At least it seems that way. So anyway, I'm listening to it, to the country radio, and on comes an advertisement for my buddy Pat Winsett, or Pastor Pat Winsett, I guess I should say, wife of wonderful gospel revolutionary Pastor Ted Winsett, and also my tax agent. And I'm driving up the road, you see, and I nearly fell out of my chair. And this ad comes on for Pat Winsett, and I'm going, oh, she's my friend. I know her. For some reason, I felt really proud. But anyway, and we're talking, by the way.
She is an accountant. It wasn't an ad for the gospel. It was an ad for an accounting firm, which she runs. Yeah.
So if any of you folks need a good accountant, talk to Patty Winsett. She knows her stuff. Anyway, where the heck were... Oh, golly. I've just slipped off the planet here. And yeah, antinomianism. $10,000 reward. If you can find that term anywhere in the Bible, Greek, English, Turkish, I don't really give a rip. Just if you can find it, I've got $10,000 with your name on it. Now, oh, if we don't get into this this letter, we're never going to do it, Michael.
Well, we're kind of already there. We'll just continue with where we left off.
I like that.
Last week.
I do like that. I'm just...
You're doing a good job, Barris.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, mate. So we're going to take up this from where we left off last week. And this letter was talking about how people should believe the true message of grace. And in that PowerCast, we explained that it would be nice to know what grace actually was. The writer of this letter talks a lot about grace without ever defining grace. And all I can say is either everybody knows what grace is, or this is done on purpose so as not to have to say what it is anyway. I don't know a better way to put it. So the writer says, instead, they emphasize what you don't have to do. You don't have to pray. You don't have to read your Bible. You don't have to repent. You don't have to go to church. And of course, you don't have to give. The listener becomes paralyzed. They think anything they do is dead works and makes them a legalist. They emphasize, how do you paralyze someone by not doing something? Instead, they emphasize what you don't have to do. The listener becomes paralyzed. It always amazes me how they slaughter a local pastor for receiving tithes or an offering. Yet they gladly take what was formerly given to your church and use it for their purposes. Well, I'm just going to have to haul up and address this, mate, if you don't. Firstly, when was the last time you asked for tithes, Michael?
Well, we don't ask for tithes whatsoever, and I don't know of any, I'd have to go search back through ancient history, but I'd say there probably are some people who used to support churches and their pastors that now support the gospel, but that's true in Jim's case. I mean, it's true in every case. The breaking point here is that issue. It is whether or not this is tithes. Is it taken in with the promise that God is going to now take care of all your financial needs because you gave an offering, sent in a tithe, whatever you want to call it? Let me draw attention to the number one thing. Is that anybody that supports the gospel revolution knows it will not help them to a spiritual advantage at all. It will give you no spiritual advantage over any other person. That's the difference. So if people do transfer these funds, it is not because we have convinced them God will bless them more if they give it to us. It is not because we've convinced them that their offering will cause their lives to be richer, their families to be more blessed. It's not because of any of those promises. There's one promise that's different than what goes out to the others. We promise to share with other people exactly what has changed your life.
Let me emphasize the fact that this is a pledge month for us. So later in this PowerCast, you're going to be hearing us encourage people to give us money.
Money, 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 money.
No tithes, money. We want to get the gospel out. And in that respect, we're not talking about tithes, we're talking about offerings. So when this letter talks about tithes, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what it's talking about. The listener becomes paralyzed. It always amazes me how they slaughter a local pastor for receiving tithes. Mike Williams' ministries in the Gospel Revolution have never received tithes.
Yeah, exactly.
Have never received tithes.
And more importantly, we've not asked for tithes.
Ever.
Because these people don't just receive tithes, Barris. They demand them.
Oh.
Because there's threats. If you don't tithe, this is going to happen. That's going to happen. This is not going to happen. You want this, and this won't happen, and that won't happen. This is not quite that innocuous. It's not just an issue of receiving. Well, that sounds nice. Well, we stand here humbly, and we receive what you insist to get to tithe. That's not the teaching. Listen to the teaching of all these guys, and they will give you every threat in the world. When you teach that if you don't tithe, you might as well put a flag over your house that says cursed on it. I don't think that is receiving. Doesn't that sound nice? All we're doing is receiving tithes.
Just catching up again, it always amazes me how they slaughter a local pastor for receiving tithes or an offering. Well, actually, no. May I respectfully say that we never receive tithes, nor do we ask for them, and we would never slaughter a local pastor for receiving an offering. It costs money to heat a sanctuary. It costs money to feed the poor. Oh, that's right. You come up with that. Let me just keep going. Yet they gladly take what was formerly given to your church and use it for their purposes. Well, and let me continue. They have no respect for the children, teens, elderly, and other areas of ministry that cost money. They make you look like a money-hungry thief, but they gladly receive gifts that provide nothing for the giver other than a sermon. Okay. Golly, I think we've got a power cast right here, Mr. Michael.
Yeah.
So let me just start with this.
We forgot about the helicopter blades it provides, right?
Oh, dear, yes.
And we forgot about the jet planes and the $5 million homes. And
golly. Everybody requires an income. And the very first point I'd like to make is that Mike Williams' income depended on certain people living up to their promises. If I'm not mistaken, the church out of which this letter has proceeded had obligations that they have never kept. So let me just make that point up front. The second point I'd like to make is, and yeah, Michael, I'm gonna let you loose here in a minute. honestly, this is too much for me. Do we criticize tithing? Oh, yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know we do. Because, firstly, the thing about tithing in the Christian church is that it is encouraged on the basis mostly of Malachi chapter 3. That is the last book in the Old Testament and chapter 3. Now, there's a few points I'd like to make here. Number one, it was written towards the Levite priests, and it was they who were being castigated for not tithing. They were, and by the way, tithing was a funding for a theocracy. Now, if you live in a theocracy, by all means, fund it that way. But you don't. You live in a Western democracy, probably, if you're hearing my voice, and you pay taxes. See, if you wanted a birth certificate or a marriage certificate, you went to the Levite priests. Somebody had to pay their way. It was a theocracy funded by tithing. By the way, tithing in the Bible never meant cash.
Yeah, thank you, Barris. Now, if we're going to stick with the fundamentals of tithing, what did they receive as tithes? So what would it have been?
It was always and only entirely organic. It was, if you're a fisherman, you brought your fish.
So he didn't bring the money that he made from fishing. He brought the product that he sold.
It was always produce, or for you non-Americans, produce. Yeah, cows, wheat, barley. See, this is why
mint and cumin.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that's why Jesus didn't say to the Pharisees, "Oh, you are so precise. You take this, 10 cents here." No, he says you take
right down to the penny. He didn't say right down to the penny, did he?
Never said it. He said right down to the leaf of the cumin. And what was the other thing you said?
Mint.
Mint. See, you chefs, you got it over me. Now, the third thing I'd like to say about tithing is every third year you had to take your tithe and you had to buy strong drink and have a big party.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Is it Numbers 18? But it was very clear. See, if you're gonna teach people to tithe, at least be consistent.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, the Worldwide Church of God did that. They taught three times.
Where do I sign up?
I know. You should have heard when the guy was reporting to Pat Robertson on the 700 Club after the Gospel Revolution had caused the collapse of the Worldwide Church of God. And they had one of the guys, because the Worldwide Church of God was considered to be a cult. But when they were interviewing the guy who was promoting grace now in the Worldwide Church of God, he was explaining their doctrine on tithing. And he said, you know, he says, the Christian world's got it wrong. He says, actually, the covenant requires a triple tithe.
Yes.
And Pat said, where's that? He forgot the whole interview almost. It's like, no, show me. Ah, triple tithe.
Oh,
where is that?
That's funny. Yep. The Jewish tithes added up to between 27 and 33%. So when you teach tithing, at least be consistent. Just and be consistent.
Be consistent. Barris, there is no denomination based on a focus on the gospel. They are all focused on, they all evolve out of which part of the law do we revere higher than other parts.
So Paul said, it is for freedom. You have been set free. Well, at least, look, for those of you who think I don't quote the nearly inspired version, the NIV, I just did. But that's what Paul says. Paul says, look, it's for freedom. I thought it was for this or that or the other. No, I was set free to be free. Free of what? And Jeff covered it so perfectly in those videos. If we are not free from the law, I mean, what are we free from?
Yeah, exactly.
No, we're free to be free. Gospel revolutionaries, you can do whatever you want. And yes... This is not being lawless. This is not antinomian. This is saying you can do whatever you want. You are free to do whatever you want. It is never going to put a chasm between you and God. How the heck could it? Because you are.
Thank you, Jesus.
God. You are one with God.
Yeah.
You can't ever separate yourself. For who shall separate us from the love of God which is in Christ? You can't separate yourself. Sorry.
Yeah,
neither
exactly.
Death. Yep. Oh, man, I'm going to start preaching anytime soon.
Well, and that is, and the let me tell you where Christianity makes the emphasis of freedom. You are freed from sex, drugs, rock and roll.
And you are freed to be this, do that.
Yes. So the measure of freedom is based on morality. Now, let me tell you something. If that's the measure, then nobody's free because who's going to measure the morality by what? Well, if you measure the morality by anything, you'd have to make it God's law. Well, God's law says that one of your triple tithes has to go toward getting plastered drunk once a year.
And that is the same word used in, Numbers 18? We're doing this off the top today, family. I'm not even looking up the Bible references. But
check it yourself.
Yeah, yeah, go check it. And if you want to know more, call us and we'll fill you in. But did you?
Yeah, call Jeff.
Yeah, Jeffrey is sitting there. He told me earlier today that he's sitting there waiting desperately for somebody to talk to him. Please bother him.
Jeff is sitting there waiting.
He is. Oh, look, I just.
Yes. I know you're trying, so I wanted to help you.
This is the same strong drink, by the way, that you have to buy. You have to buy it.
And you have to drink it.
Oh, dear.
It's required by law.
Let me tell you something that you will never hear a preacher preach. I preached it, but you won't ever hear a preacher preach it. Because you're not going to get my old tapes. I'm too embarrassed. But here's a fact. When I say, Mike, I'm gonna mention a chapter in the Bible, I want you to tell me immediately the first thing springs into your mind. Proverbs 31.
The holy woman.
The godly wife. Yep.
Yeah.
Let me quote to you from Proverbs 31.
Oh, this is fun.
Give strong drink unto him who is ready to perish, and wine unto them who be of heavy hearts. Excuse me, I've just got to pour myself another one. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. Let me tell you something. You, and I don't give a rat's, I do not give a rip where you are or who you are. I'll guarantee you never heard a preacher preach on that before. And you know why? They can't. They cannot. This is the same strong drink, by the way, that is mentioned in the third tithe. Buy strong drink. Oh, it's also the strong drink that is mentioned earlier and I'm talking about the Hebrew language here, that is mentioned earlier in the book of Proverbs. It says it's a mocker. Strong drink is a mocker. Wine is a mocker. Well, why, God, did you ever say that they had to party hardy, and also not just every third year, but also you got to feed these things to people who are about to die? No, geez. So we're speaking about tithing
and
here.
And people that are poor. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what preacher have you heard that said, if you're broke, I'll tell you what they say. If you're broke, give your way out of it.
There you go. No.
What does Proverbs say? Drink your way out of it.
Oh, God, I love it. Oh, this is too... Oh, my. I can't believe that we have had so much... I don't know. Rarely has one letter given so much for so long. That's all I know.
Now, at this point would be where we would be accused of recklessness. The statement I just made, to drink your way out of it. But see, here's the power of the gospel. We know people have common sense. We don't have to teach common sense. We don't have to teach people as though they are stupid.
No, yes, we do. This letter here says we do.
Well, yes. Well, there is a certain form of stupidity. But the folks that we know listen to us, we know that they think. Isn't it amazing? Now, see, it just amazed me. I was sitting here in my own living room within the last couple of months, and the thing that went running through my head was just my life and where it's at right now and what I do, what I don't do. I realized the degree of, let me call it self-control, that I now have, that I did not have all the years I was under the law.
I thought self-control was a gift of the Spirit in Galatians 5.
It is indeed. But you see, there is no gift that can come by the law. This is called self-control. It is something that comes from the Spirit. And the Spirit and the law do not mix. A gift, grace, That's what grace is. Even where you see the term gift, it's the word grace. So every time you see that, and gift and law and grace and law do not mix. Why do people struggle so hard with all of these obsessive compulsive behaviors within the Christian community? It's because you cannot have fruit of the Spirit and law abiding in the same place. You just can't.
The Greek word for grace and also the word gift in the English translations comes from the Greek root charis.
Yes.
Charis. It's where we get our English word charitable. And when you talk about a gift, it is a charity, or when Paul talks in the King James, he says these three shall are big, their faith, hope, and love. He says faith, hope, and charity.
Yes.
So when, yeah.
Yeah, so this is, you need to understand that where law is, gift does not operate.
So, may I continue the rest of this sentence? We're talking about gift, charity, and this letter says, they have, talking about the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries, they have no respect for the children, teens, elderly, and other areas of ministry that cost money. This is a gift. It is gifting. And here is what this letter totally ignores. To the writer of this letter, I say this. You don't know what I give, and you don't know who I give it to, and you don't know why I give it. In fact, you know, in the old days I would have said, sweet F.A., you know nothing about my giving. You don't know who I give it to. I fed homeless people for several years in Nashville, and you don't know how often I dug into my pocket to feed these people. You don't know it.
Yes, and to say that we're not concerned about those folks, it's because of those very folks that is mentioned in this article that we preach the gospel so strongly. Let me tell you, one thing that I'm glad that I moved for was the fact that where I lived in Houston, I'd always go and get my McDonald's coffee in the mornings, and on Sunday morning I had to go past a large church. Now, the parking lot was on the other side of the six-lane street, so they had to have cops and everything out there to get people to church.
And it's Houston, folks. You got to have three lanes just to get to McDonald's.
So many times I would get stopped there, and I would see these parents, probably wonderful parents in many cases, with child in tow. And maybe two or three of them, and man, I'm embarrassed. I by the time I got back from McDonald's from stopping at this obstacle on my way to and back from McDonald's, my heart was so aching. I it wasn't worth the coffee on Sunday mornings. I oh my gosh, folks. I started thinking back to the time when I was a child in those Sunday school classes and being told that there was a burning hell that God would send people to that didn't, as is described in this letter, keep God's law, and that you must believe in Jesus and all of the requirements. And it screwed up my life, folks, in a way that I cannot even begin to describe. So, yes, we are concerned about the elderly. We're concerned about those. I just flipped on Rod Parsley's program yesterday.
Oh, you didn't?
I did.
What, you needed a fix or something?
And he had this guy that's been so debunked in all of these claims, and His new thing was, and he's always coming up with new tricks to get people.
Oh, let me. I got to guess. Is it Morris Morello?
No. If you said his name, I would know it. But
it has to be the chubby guy with the beard.
He does have a beard.
Mike, I'm getting it. It's coming. Mike.
Murdoch.
Mike Murdoch. There you go.
Yeah, I believe that was him.
There you go.
I'm getting my names back there confused occasionally. Thank God that's becoming a dull memory. But anyway, this guy has been debunked so many different ways. But one of their new ways, just to bring it up in us answering this letter, and getting these revelations. See, he got a revelation that.
Oh well, that's different. I mean, if you get a revelation, I mean, no one can stand against a revelation.
The first 700 people.
come on, and you left the channel on. Oh, really?
The first 700 people that.
You know what my wife says to me, Michael? She says, "You know, you're just going to get really
pissed,
and all you're going to do is say this, and you're going to change. Why don't you just not watch it?"
No. Well, I stayed on long enough to hear the whole plan, and you know, because it might have been a good plan. I had to listen.
Could have been. You could have been a winner.
But he said, for the first 700 people who contribute, now they know how much people's mortgage payments have gone up.
Oh, boy.
They said everybody.
Oh, and health care.
Everybody the first 700 who give the amount of their mortgage.
Oh, Lord.
1 month of mortgage.
If
you give it, now here's the promise. Uh-huh. God himself was going to pay off your mortgage. All you had to do is make one more payment.
Well, I mean, dang, why would I want to work anymore?
Yeah.
Oh, Michael.
So we are. Now, who's that hitting? That's hitting elderly. That's hitting. So, you know, say that that there's a lack of concern for the money. No, we're concerned about the money being spent on the elderly and on the children. We're concerned about what it's being spent for. That you're using it to preach messages to steal more money from them.
Now, oh Lord. So you remember that old story in one of the Gospels about the lady who gave her farthing, her last mite, her last piece of cash, her last coin? Here's what I want to know. I want to know, under what kind of regime, under what kind of religious regime, would a woman be persuaded to give her last dime, her last cent, her last anything? Could it be it was under a regime that preached, pay your way out of your problem? Yeah. Could that be?
Yeah. Now, of course, they can go to all the Old Testament stories about the woman and her son and the prophet visiting, and they were about to make their last meal and then die, and the prophet said, "No, make it for me and forget about you." And so the prophet made, folks, these are all types and shadows of Jesus. This isn't something for you to pull out of context.
Jesus said they were all written about him. The law, the Psalms, the prophets. That is in one of the prophets. Okay, you're going to say it's in the historicals, the Samuels and Chronicles and Kings. The fact of the matter is, Jesus said it was all written about me.
All of it is about him. And that is the facts, folks. And that is the fact. And so,
and by the way, that's a fact.
Yes, that is a fact.
just so you needed that. That's Oh, we've only gotten through, golly, I think this is, we've taken more time. Oh, gosh, we've gotten through three. Where are we? An hour 24. We can do some more. Shall we go on, Mike?
Let us.
This letter goes on to say, doctrinally, they often have enough tidbits of information to make people question your ministry. I just need to go back a couple of powercasts. If your people can be so easily swayed, so easily changed from your ministry, firstly, it wasn't your ministry.
Or your people.
Yeah, really, or your sheep to shear. But really? Okay, doctrinally, they often have enough tidbits of information to make people question your ministry. However, while some of these things may be true, they are not truth. This could actually see out this powercast. So while some of these things are may be true, they are not truth.
Mm.
I want you to just think about this with me.
I wish you'd give us an example.
Examples are all we've ever asked for, but apparently they are very thin on the ground. But think about this statement. However, while some of these things may be true, how can some things be true? They may be true, right? How can they be true, but they're not truth? Please, help me. Am I a failure from grade three? What is it about this that seems so outrageous to me? However, while some of these things may be true, they are not truth. Oh, please, give me a break. What a piece. Oh, I don't even know how to comment on that. He goes on and says, truth is when the word is applied the way God intended.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
May I strongly suggest to the writer of this letter, truth is when the word is applied the way you intended.
Yeah. And to settle the whole issue, truth is how God applied it, not how we apply it. And truth was applied 2,000 years ago. Grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. It doesn't come by the local pastor. It doesn't come by Michael Williams. Grace and truth came, past tense, came by Jesus Christ. The law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ.
And Jesus said, I don't judge you, but there is one who does judge you, Moses.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember, gosh, Bearis, when I read through that about Jesus saying that he didn't judge, but Moses did. And this whole comparative gospel, it does bring a clear distinction between Moses and Jesus. Well, I call it a comparative gospel because it constantly compares law to grace, first Adam to the last Adam.
And the writer says, they make you look like a money-hungry thief. Well, could that be because you are?
Well, and could it be because it's just pretty blatant?
$700. Hey, just give half of your mortgage.
No, your whole mortgage payment.
Oh, you got to give it all.
Equivalent to your mortgage payment.
Dang.
So if your mortgage payment's $1,500 a month, then you have to kick in $1,500 to qualify for Jesus to pay your mortgage off. And there's no reason we should address these things. There's nothing wrong with this.
My wife, to this day, Laura, my darling bride, says, I gave $1,000 to an Easter, something about resurrection, I can't remember, to Mike Murdoch. This guy has made enough money out of people. He ought to be in bloody prison. But he ain't. And why? Because it's Christianity. That's why.
Exactly. And then he wrote a book, 25 Reasons. Everybody kept saying to him, it don't work. It don't work. So he wrote a book on 25 Reasons Why It Don't Work. And
was that like 88 Reasons Why Jesus Is Coming Back in 88?
And everybody that read the 25 reasons that it wouldn't work said, I'd have never given the money in the first place if I'd have known this, these qualifications were on there.
There you go.
Oh, my
goodness. So the writer goes on to say, doctrinally, they have often enough tidbits of information to make people question your ministry. However, while some of these things may be true, they are not truth. Truth is when the word is applied the way God intended. We've covered all that. When we walk in love and are empowered by grace, we will do what we do because it is our desire. Grace and faith.
Now, wait a minute. Wait.
Dang, we're never going to get through this letter.
He says, he said, we do what we do because we love and it comes from our heart. But that's not what he said earlier. He said, we do what we do because it's in the law. And if you don't keep the law, then it's just so contradictory. Well,
of course, we don't know what he thinks about grace is. We don't know what the writer thinks grace is. So as long as, hey, I can argue with you about the trees in my backyard and the grass. But if I don't actually define what the trees are and what the grass is, guess what? We're having a pointless conversation. Okay. Oh, dear. Grace and truth. Grace and faith righteousness don't stop us from doing godly things.
No, it sure doesn't.
They merely empower us to do them for godly, healthy reasons. Oh, really? So you can do things, and the reasons behind why you're doing things is a big deal. Let me tell you something. I do things because I love people. I do things because I think other people matter. I do things because I think that God is in all of us.
And you do it indiscriminately, Barris. You don't decide whether or not they qualify, whether or not they are tithers. You don't do it because they don't get drunk and because they're not homosexuals and because they're, they didn't go through a divorce. You do it because it comes from your heart. And this is the devastating thing about a legalistic mindset, is that legalism always determines a certain groups of people who do not qualify to get help.
Because they have to qualify on the grounds of the law.
Merits of the law, yes.
Yeah.
Which that would disqualify the helper. I'll guarantee you that. Now, let me assure everyone that's listening to us right now, no matter how much it sounds like there's a group of people on this planet that keep God's law, they never kept it when it was in effect.
But they believe they do now.
And now they think they do it, and they do it by grace that they keep it. Well, I'm sorry, how can you keep it when you don't even know what it is? There's 613 laws, Barris, and if you don't know what they all are, how do you apply them to your daily life? That's what this whole article is about. But the fact of it is, you know, if you don't even know what the law is, how can you measure your life of grace? And we pointed out things, you know, that either the law is intact or the law is not. This self-provisioning of God's law, based on what? I don't know, except personal, well, I didn't do this. I know I did that. And, you know, there's, like we said, you know, in the area of divorce, you know, people can throw these things out there all the time, but I can tell you there's few things that God said he hated, but he hated divorce. And now in Christianity, divorce is really quite okay. You can actually have a pastor that is divorced. And in America now, we can actually have a president that's been divorced. There was a time in American history when a divorced person would never even think of running for president. And I think we've made progress. Why are God's laws becoming something that society is defining? Even pastors redefining God's law.
Say that again.
Why is God's law something that people and pastors are redefining as to what it is? And which is most important? Which one do we condemn? Which one do we rally against? Which one we rally for? When divorce, you know, when my generation, divorce was at the top of the list. Oh my God, a divorced woman was frowned on way more than a divorced man. Now why? I don't know. Well, we do know why. Because religion always oppresses women more than it does anyone else. It oppresses everyone.
I took a divorced woman out once. Okay, so I see, and I'm talking to the writer of the letter, I see that this person mentions Andrew Womack. And Andrew Womack is a person who teaches that healing comes in very specific ways. Let me read from Isaiah 58. The writer of this letter is saying, these people don't care about the elderly, the children. Oh, no, no, they're just so nasty. Well, let me read to you from Isaiah 58. It says this, is this not the fast I have chosen, to loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, that you break every yoke? By the way, this was under the law. The law that the writer of this letter says was so important we should keep.
Yeah.
My question's going to be, why the hell don't you keep this? Is it not to deal your bread to the hungry, and that you would bring the poor that are cast out into your house? When you see the naked, you should cover him, and that you should not hide yourself from your own flesh. That means your own kindred, your own family, which means the human family. Because if you do this, verse 8 of Isaiah 58, then shall your light break forth as a morning, and your health shall spring forth speedily. Is this not saying that if you did these things, Benny Hinn would not have a ministry, because you wouldn't be going to a healing ministry, because your healing would follow your actions?
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Then shall your light break forth as a morning, and your health shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. You know what? I am struck by the fact that most of these modern televangelists, oh, it doesn't matter, most modern Christianity says, you want to be righteous, you got to do this. You want to be righteous, you got to follow this. You want to be righteous, you got to say that. No, if you want to be righteous, because it'll go before you, not after you, people won't have to ask. It's just sitting right there for them to see. They can't say anything against it.
Yeah. So if you want to be righteous, you have to bring the most destitute, poverty-stricken people in your neighborhood into your home.
Not only that, but the end of verse 8 says, and the glory of the Lord shall be your reward. Mm-hmm. Hey. Guess what? You're wanting glory, Mike Murdoch. You're wanting glory. All these people who write this just total balderdash. You want glory? Why don't you do what God says will bring you glory? Maybe I won't get the money.
And this group of people are the most insulated from those in poverty of anybody on the planet. They are completely insulated. They, living in properties that don't even allow people in, unless they're wealthy, unless they're mowing your lawn, and much less to invite them inside. That part really hit me. if you know, if you're going to keep the law, if you're going to do this so that you can, quote, be blessed or be righteous, as it was, which they are synonymous, you have to invite the poorest of the poor into your home. Why don't they preach that?
They can't, because it's too inconvenient. I remember ringing up, I called up the office of Tony Campolo. Tony Campolo is an extraordinary individual, and by the way, he's a fascinating bloke as well. He is, or was, anti-homosexual. His wife is entirely pro-gay. One of them's liberal, one of them's conservative.
Mm.
And I called up his office to say, did you really say this, Tony? And he told me, yeah, I did say this, and you can quote it. And it was this. Last night, 30,000 children around the world died of malnutrition. By the way, he said this in a church environment. Then he said, most of you don't give a shit. And then he said, and most of you are more upset that I just said shit than that 30,000 kids died last night.
Boy, that's the truth. And, you know, if we're going to get down to, you know, from the heart, let's talk about real heart issues. Let's talk about things that really do, you know, show the heart. But if you're going to be under the law, folks, please don't excuse yourself. Please read the law. Please keep the law intact. Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution loves God's law.
I loved hearing Jeff say that in that video we were talking about. We love the law.
Mm-hmm. We love God's law. The Gospel Revolution loves God's law. We respect God's law. We hold it completely intact. Because the only one who had the right to fulfill the law or keep the law was Jesus. Jesus said, I didn't come. It's really funny when people quote this first verse, they always leave out the second part. They say, Jesus said he didn't come to do away with the law. Well, it says he didn't come to do away with the law or the prophets. So are they saying that no prophecy has been fulfilled? Why don't they defend the prophets from Jesus the way they defend the law from Jesus? Jesus put these two on equal footing. And Jesus said then, I didn't come to destroy, but to fulfill. Law and prophets is what he's addressing here. So this is just so disingenuous to me to take this position and then be selective about and parcel out the law. This is so convenient.
And so it is, family. We must leave you. Don't forget to visit www.thetruegospel.net and order your copy of Redemption, A Declaration for All, Not a Choice for a Few. One of the best study guides ever written to destroy forever any illusions that there is any degree of separation between God and man. If you want the quickest route between where you are now and being ravished by the oceans of grace, washing all traces of self-doubt away, this is it. We run a value-for-value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value-for-value model is the only way we feel that we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider donating towards it. Come on, stick your hands in your pocket and give Jeff Robertson a call, 321-220-4373. Ask him how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. And remember that cash is not the only way that you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you would like to invite Mike to your area. I recommend against it.
Even as do I.
It's easier, though, than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details when, where, and why, and we will make it happen. So now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama, a town so pure, pristine, and primitive that it could only have been named after the mother of all humanity.
And it's good evening from Michael Williams right here in the city that doesn't have to claim anything. Just come and see it. Thank you, guys. This letter gives us a real where the rubber meets the road type of teaching that is, I hope it is as beneficial to you as it is for me and also for Beres. I mean, we've gotten a lot out of this. It has brought great clarity to some things that we had great clarity on anyway. But it just gets clearer, and that's what the gospel does. The gospel is very fractal in nature, and you'll find that one part of the gospel defines the entire gospel, and the entire gospel defines the one part. So thank you, folks, so much for tuning in and for giving. Not forgiving, for giving, which we're supposed to be in a pledge drive, but we've got so excited about the gospel, we completely forgot about it this time. But thank you guys so very much. We do need your help this pledge drive, as we do each one. We operate on a thin budget. We are not awash in cash. And right now we are falling behind by about $3,000 to $4,000 in this pledge drive. Now, that's not our goal. Our goal is way above that. I'm talking about we need at least $3,000 or $4,000 more to come in this month just to bring us up even again. So we appreciate all that you do. We love you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing. Pretty much all over again.
And even better.
The Calf Path. One day, through the primeval wood, a calf walked home, as good calves should, but made a trail all bent askew, a crooked trail, as all calves do. Since then, 200 years have fled, and I infer the calf is dead. But still he left behind his trail, and thereby hangs my moral tale. The trail was taken up next day by a lone dog that passed that way, and then a wise bellwether sheep pursued the trail o'er vale and steep, and drew the flock behind him too, as good bellwethers always do. And from that day o'er hill and glade, through these old woods a path was made, and many men wound in and out, and dodged and turned and bent about, and uttered words of righteous wrath, because 'twas such a crooked path. But still they followed, do not laugh, the first migrations of that calf, and through this winding woodway stalked, because he wobbled when he walked. This forest path became a lane that bent and turned again. This crooked lane became a road where many a poor horse with his load toiled on beneath the burning sun and travelled some 3 miles in one, and thus a century and a half they trod the footsteps of that calf. The years passed on in swiftness fleet. The road became a village street, and this, before men were aware, a city's crowded thoroughfare, and soon the central street was this of a renowned metropolis, and men 2 centuries and a half trod in the footsteps of that calf. Each day 100,000 a rout followed the zigzag calf about, and o'er his crooked journey went the traffic of a continent. 100,000 men were led by one calf near 3 centuries dead. They followed still his crooked way and lost 100 years a day. For thus such reverence is lent to well-established precedent. moral lesson this might teach, were I ordained and called to preach, for men are prone to go it blind along the calf paths of the mind, and work away from sun to sun to do what other men have done. They follow in the beaten track, and out and in and forth and back, and still their devious course pursue to keep the path that others do. But how the wise old wood gods laugh, who saw the first primeval calf. Ah, many things this tale might teach, but I'm not ordained to preach.
Gonna leave this world.